Maybe you do.
It's just here. And I was in this room like an hour ago.
Someone comes to like 5:30.
Really? I guess Ben, we should know, right? It should be mysterious. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Exactly. So, let's finish up with the... again, these are, you know, these other stuff. I guess it's a very formal group, and, you know, we should make the most of this formality. Okay, so we had been discussing this piece of the end of Yishalach, we're being Kari Lemafrei a little bit. I want to finish up that one on the Higos, a grid piece, which I think is obviously very connected to it. We read the beautiful depiction, the description, you know, what I call the personalization of Kach Mehamasorah and the experience of learning. So I just wanted to finish up with that. This is really the end of the whole Ubikashta Mishnah. So the Sikkum in the end, which is like, you know, what he considers the stages, I reach, I'm not going to discuss that because we just do the beginning. But before we get to that, the whole section is basically, as you recall, I mean, it's a little bit eclipsed by the beauty of the story. But the point of the story is the idea of time and the idea that, that you know, Gilui Shechina and Maimon Har Sinai is like an ongoing process. And that history, basically, of course, you know, there is chronology in history, there's sequence in history, you know, the past is the present and the future, but what we're saying is that when it comes to timeless quest for, you know, kedusha, for spirituality, in halakhic terms, meaning the implementation of Torah mitzvos, you know, as a value system, you know, in a way that gives our lives meaning, so the both personally and historically, you know, that allows you to kind of that neutralizes, you know, the time element, and therefore the past, the present, and the future often, you know, emerge. And this was connected to, you know, the concept that a Talmud Chacham, you know, is like a Navi, even though of course we distinguish between a Navi and a Talmud Chacham, a Navi Rosh HaLechadish Navar Me'ata, and all sorts of, you know, Chacham Adif Minavi. But and Nevuah seems like a very different process than Libud HaTorah is. One is, you know, requires some level of inspiration. Even according to the Rambam, who is of the opinion that you that a Navi can prepare for his Nevuah, even though there's debate among the Mefarshei Rambam and Mar Nevuchim, you know, whether or not you know, it's automatic or it can be prevented. You know, how much preparation, how much inspiration. But that aside, the point is that Nevuah is, you know, seemingly, phenomenologically, a very different experience than Limud. Right? Limud HaTorah, especially, you know, Brisker Limud, but any Limud, is intellectual, and it's about steps, and it's about, you know, logic, proofs, you know, evidence, the weight of that cumulative evidence, and so on and so forth. Whereas Nevuah is is a an experience, it's a divine experience. It defies a little bit description, even. The mechanisms, even according to the Rambam, as I said, you know, you can prepare someone for it, but the mechanisms transcend your preparation. So, I mean, that comparison is just a very, it's not a belitza b'alma, because he keeps coming back to it. So what it means is that you know, Limud HaTorah is not just, you know, intellectual mastery of a topic, and even though it does require the intellectual process and the rigor of that and so on and so forth, the analysis and so forth. But in the end of the day, again, it's more than the sum of its parts. And by reconstructing or connecting with that moment in time that was meant to be the moment for all times, my language, but that's basically what he's describing, so the, you know, you break down time barriers and you become part of this, you know, flow, just like Nevuah. And just like a Navi is more than the sum of his Nevuah, and it changes him, and then what he gives to the, you know, Tzibur who listened to him, you know, he gives of himself, Atzilus min Aruach, right? The same is true, and that's a Chiddush, but it's a beautiful Chiddush, and it rings true, and it's the Chiddush of a Maven, that's true in the context of Mesorah, of Torah Shebaal Peh, and Limud HaTorah as well. And therefore, this description about, you know, breaking down the time barriers, you know, and personalizing, you know, the Rambam, you know, the, you know, seeing the Limudat Torah as like this adventure and this drama, and, you know, getting emotional about it, and, you know, the Rambam being your only friend, and being upset when the father, you know, can't solve the problem. All of this is, as the Rav says, it's a, in the end of the, you know, the story, he says, Chabayezu Shayechet Limeyalduti, Ava Bechozoti Lo Fantasia, it's not a fantasy, Shel Zahav Shel Nar Katan, it's not like the fantasy of a child, right? Ein Hagashazu Begeder Mystica, it's also not mystical. Imitziyum Psychologit Historit Gemura Shechaya Gam Akshav Be'imke Nishmati. Meaning this is something that I, like, imbibed, you know, through osmosis, you know, living in my home, where this is like the most important thing that could ever be happening. You know, this was drama, and it's still part of my consciousness, you know, today. And then, you know, he continues, Kashani Yoshev L'mod, Inini Nimtza Tekef U'miyad B'chaburas Chachmei HaMesorah, Hayachas Beineinu Hu Ishi, it's personal. So again, you know, he's a great writer, and the Rav knew how to do it, but, you know, it's if you were in his Dalet Amos, and you could really, when he gave a shir, I mean, you could see it's totally, totally true. I mean, this is how he perceived it, and how he, you know, projected it. Nothing was more important, and everything was very personal, and it was like he had a responsibility to the material, you know, and so on. So, these, you know, this, you know, transition, I guess, from the special story to the, you know, to kind of a sober assessment, you know, 60 years later, is an important piece. And again, it has to do still with this notion of breaking down time and what Chachmei HaMesorah mean, how Chachmei HaMesorah are like Nevi'im, not in the content of what they say, but we'll get that in a second, but in the, you know, the importance of the experience and in its roots, you know, being Nevuah, because it's Gilui Shechina, it's Maimon Har Sinai and what was given there that we're always, you know, basically trying to understand and refine and transmit. So that's, you know, kind of another element where Nevuah, you know, comes into play. And he makes this clear. It's not just an intellectual experience, right? Right, the mingling and the friendship of generations. His davgut shel ruach beruach. That's it. To me, it's very interesting. Again, it's hard to know, but the language here is very almost quasi mystical. When people write about, you know, Unio Mystica, you know, Devekus, you know, in Kabbalah or Hasidus, etc. This is the kind of language that they use. I think, you know, either it's a little bit of hyperbole, but I think more to the point, again, if religious experience, not just, you know, act of, you know, education or intellection is what's happening, so it's his davgut shel ruach beruach, ichud shel nefesh benefesh, right? Eile shemasru es haTorah, eile shekiblu osa, mizdamdim lepundak historia chav. So, yeah.
No, it's like usually, I mean, maybe I'm just coming from the Seilas HaSharon camp, but just like if I would have heard someone say, oh, you know, Torah is not just a didactic,
right,
a subject, but it is fill in the blank, I wouldn't have said this,
right?
It's like, oh, but rather it's, you know, this like, you know,
Mussar,
yeah, like it, Luminamunas Lassos, like the Gemara,
right,
says countless,
right,
times,
right,
or something,
right,
like that, and
right,
now like it's,
right,
just.
So he's saying, this is religious experience. This is, you don't need, you know, this, again, you can really, that's why I say, this is the Lithuanian tradition. The reason that there was so much antipathy, you know, for Hasidus and all these other things is because, you know, they really believe that, in the sense that, like, you can get everything you need from the Torah. Again, in Ishalach, I think we mentioned this, I'm not sure. We talk about, Muslim movement, or we didn't. No. Anyways, in Ish Halacha, he talks about, you know, why Reb Chaim was opposed to the Musa movement.
Right.
And he has a line there where he, that's interesting to, I was trying to do this open last year, but then time ran out. But, you know, to compare the Rav's opposition to the Musa movement and the Chazonish, because Chazonish is also from the Lithuanian camp, really. So the Rav has a, you know, he quotes from Chaim as saying, you know, that, you know, Musar is you know, has a function, you know, for people. It's like, you know, it's like medicine, and you give it to people who are sick. You know, but people who learn Torah are not people who are sick, but people who are healthy. Meaning, they really believe, and listen, I believe it. I just think Lamaisa, in reality, there are reasons why it doesn't always end up that way. You have to be realistic, and there are, I think, benefits. I also have respect for other schools that have different, not schools, like, you know, what school did you go to? Askulot, I guess, you know. Derech HaLimud schools, or Derech HaShkafa schools. But he really, you know, believed that, that, you know, if the, you know, if this is a kind of Gilui, Nevua, and so on, so it's all, the Musar is here, you know. If you have cultivate the perspective that the Chachmei HaMesorah are, you know, are all here in front of you, and we're inspired by them, and we're, you know, held to their standard, there's a lot of truth to it, hafoch vahafoch batikul amami, you know, in terms of being, because the concepts and the people and the, it's all, you know, just incredibly self-defining. So that's what he's writing. And that's what I'm trying to point out, because you can read it also, but I'm sort of exactly what you're saying, which is that you would have expected the Ella to be something different, but it isn't, but it's totally consistent.
So is this a religious idea?
I mean, totally. As opposed to what?
As opposed to, like, I could see someone totally secular saying
no.
These same words no, and no. Saying basically, like when you're studying evolution, Lahavdil, like anything, like...
No, because it's so like, totally secular.
You perceive, you know... Darwin and here and like
no, but it's stimulating.
That's very stimulating.
Right,
intellectually
stimulating. Right, Rob's not talking about intellectual.
He's going much more, much beyond.
No, he's contrasting it to intellectual stimulation.
Okay,
what he's saying, yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's using language. He's saying these are our these people are alive.
Yeah,
you know, they're what they stood for is, you know, is a part of who we are. You know, and like we owe them, and we are inspired by them in a hoveh kind of a way. The, you know, the past, the present, the future are whatever. But what he's saying more than that is that this is not an intellectual. When he says it's not didactic, he means it's not intellectual. Ein esek b'divrei Torah kinyan formali techni hamitgashem b'himatzut v'chiluf yediot. Right, he chavaya kvirah shel hitiyad dud shel dorot harbei is davgut shel ruach. Ruach beruach is a spiritual term. Ichud nefesh benefesh is a spiritual term.
And what is that connection that I'm trying to create? With
you're Allah? Connecting with the Rabbanu Shel Olam by connecting through his Torah. It's, well, I mean, to use the Rambam's phrase, which the Rav right likes very much, especially in Bikashna Misham, the parts we haven't done yet, but it's totally connected to this. You know, the Rambam has a phrase in Mordechuchim, you know, the Achdut HaMaskil VaHamuskal, which means that the you know, the way that you can't reach the Rabbanu Shel Olam, because philosophically it's impossible, seemingly. Right? He's omnipotent, omniscient. You know, we don't have even language that can, you know, negative attributes, a negative theology. But the way that we do it is by connect. We can't connect directly to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. We can connect to what he gave us, and then we connect to him. That's what Limud HaTorah is. That's the Achdut HaMaskil Im HaMuskal. So, but that's a religious experience. Not
so he's just using, I mean, I guess what threw me off is his mashal with the Rambam and the Ravid and all these Rishonim. He's not saying that that's that.
He's saying what they're talking about is Dvarim Ha'om de Beru Mashal, because they're talking about Dvar Hashem. They're talking about Gili Shechina. Well, it's all Gili Shechina.
Right.
You know, the moment of revelation is the spiritual moment of the world. It's where man did the impossible. Well, it's where the Rabbanu Shel Olam made possible, you know, that man could do the impossible, right? Gilui Shechina. That's Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis, or Bishvil Yom HaShishi. You know, if it wasn't for that day, the whole world would collapse. I mean, there would be no point to the world. It would be just a, you know, a physical, chemical, you know, coincidence. which might people enjoy while they have it, but it's no meaning in it. So the whole point is that this is all the right. It's not the Rambam and the Raivin. It's the Rambam and the Raivin is Chachmei Hamisora of this moment of Gilui Shechina. It's not like also we're going there, so we're transported back there. His point is, you know, we're transported that back there, and it is now, and it's the future, and it's what we're all just trying to figure out what is Dvar Hashem, what is Gilui Shechina. Ha'evdel ben chavayati hayaldutit v'chavayati achshavit. Mitpate rak beprat echad b'yaldoti rak haRambam v'yachaveri achshav haChavruta sheli, right? Gadla v'kolelat harbe. You know, he's got more people. But again, aims at dimyon zui chavaya. He says it's not my active imagination, overactive imagination, right? Zui chavaya amukam ma'od, zui chavaya shel masoret Torah shebal peh. Then again, if you need more haHora'ah b'masorah mitnotzetzet. This is not intellectual, you know, framing of Talmud Torah. He's saying that every teaching act, you know, every Rebbe Talmud, you know, act, just like every, again, back to the Navi experience, is an act of chesed, in the sense that you can't be selfish. It's not something that you achieve or attain. You have to share it with the world because it's not yours. It was given to you, you know, as an experience, as a way of touching transcendence. So just like a Navi can't be Kovesh Nivuaso, that's what these words mean. Ha-hora'ab m'sara mitotzet at midas ha-chesed sheba bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu salamo. K'shem, right? The Rav knows how to use language. Sh'HaKadosh Baruch Hu misnai gema olam b'midas ha-chesed kach chayev ha-navi lihisnai gema zulat im dato shal ha-navi Nitarva mamtziuta el sofit v'nikshor l'dat tzur olamim. Right, this is all religious. This is all language of like unio mystica, but it's not Kabbalah and it's not Chassidus and it's not. It's unio mystica of Gilui Shechina of the content of Torah and its loveness. Hu tzarich l'dat ki hu atzinor hamerkazi. Tzinor is a very loaded, you know, Kabbalistic term. Shavo Zorema Shefa. Shefa is a very loaded term. Hashofea me'es ha-netzach al b'nei ha-adam. Ein Isho Elokim. This is one of the, again, this whole essay was supposed to originally be called Isho Elokim. Shehigil adargasho kshiras das tachas kisei ha-kavod udvechus pelokim chayim yachol hityached ha-matzmo lichyot b'hitboldut v'hitbadlut min ha-kavra. Right? Like a rich person who's given, you know, he was given the wealth, not for himself, but somebody gave him a check, and they said, you know, you can live a good life, but you have to share it. He doesn't share it. Eina nevuah v'gam ha-chachma kinyan ha-yachin nitmaneh b'tar apotropos l'shem chalukat ruchush ruchani. Anavi ha-kovesh ha-shamayim, right, he's like moel b'shlichuso. K'shem sh'akadosh baruch hu nechsaf b'pe'ulaso mitoch, right, ha-ein sof ha-tmira v'hanivdelet v'hitlabesh b'chesed pashtut v'yatzaret olamo. Just like the Rabbeinu Shalom did the ultimate act of chesed by tzimtzum, you know, and by therefore revealing himself, doing the impossible to reveal himself to make the world exist and a meaningful place. Kach chayav anavi l'hitgalot l'acherim mitoch ha'itbadlut ha'stuma shel anokhi. That's again that incredible thing. Ha'emet, I'm skipping now to the next paragraph, shel ha'nebuah mimaleit et ko yeshuto shel ha'nevi. To me, this is a great parallel to the description of the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvos. The Rambam talks about Avos Hashem. So the Rambam describes Avram Avinu. It's like one of my favorite passages. You know, Anefesh asher asah b'charan. So the Rambam says, Avraham o'avi, that Avram Avinu was so besotted, so, you know, completely taken by his Avos Hashem that he couldn't contain it. You know, his kiruv, in other words, wasn't like, you know, the Baruch Shalom said, you know, don't be selfish, go be makarev people, Avram Avinu. It was like it's overflowed from his, like he was so excited he couldn't keep it in. It's a beautiful passage. I don't know if the Rav meant that, he doesn't quote that line as I forbid some, but listen to the language. Ha'emet shel ha'nevuah mamaleit et ko yeshuto shel ha'navi. It bubbles up and pours over, you know, the boundaries. You know, the Navi is so filled with the experience of umitparetzes mitoch nivchei hatodah kiperetz eish dos etan hasochevet akol b'shitfonot. Like, you know, it flows with such force that it wipes out everything in its path, like Hurricane Sandy. Okay? Einkan tichum havayot shel ani v'ata. The boundaries of I and you, you know, don't exist when such powerful forces are, you know, let loose. Like, it's just incredible stuff. Like, what's he talking about? He's talking about nevuah, but he's really talking about nevuah as a paradigm for Talmud Torah. So that's what he's talking about. So that's how he explains again this idea of Mesorah. This is the Mesorah piece. Right, Knesset Yisrael Perusha Histavgut Shel Dor Rishon V'Acharon Shel Navi Umazin Shel Rav V'Talmud. And once again, you have that equation, right? Eidut Atika Nemana Machazot V'Chazanot Shelosh Shaku B'Tum Ma'avar B'Tahom Ma'avar Al Ritzifut Historit Al Gilgula Gilui B'Dor V'Dor. This is the breakdown of the timing, the Gilui Shechina, the Gilui of Halacha, in other words, of every generation. Hayachid v'tzipur, right? Chayavim lihichalel aydei pulat zihui historit, I think is very important. Im evra v'atida shel ha'uma gorala v'yuda. He notes that it's critical for people to feel a sense of identification and historical consciousness with the history of Klal Yisrael and with the Chacham Yisrael. In other words, it isn't enough that, oh, they be relevant, look at them as relevant and therefore they will inspire you. What he's saying is, you know, we live in the present, but we have, you know, our roots in the past, and we have, you know, a destiny that goes to the future, and that a person has to have that sense of identification. You know, if he doesn't, there's something lacking in his, you know, his status as an Oved Hashem. That's very critical. It comes to many, many issues and things. You see how people are very, like, narrowly focused, like, you know, on the present, you know, and they don't have a full appreciation of the, you know, what happened in the past, but even of their responsibility to the past, meaning all the people who, you know, who brought us to this point. I mean, to let them down by, you know, by watering down standards, by making compromises, you know, that we don't have the right to make, or in the future, like being Roas Anolad, you know, which is a critical aspect of Halacha. Hayishtatfut ha-pi'ila b'pulat ha-reconstruktsia shel ha-tochen ha-giluyi, again, reconstructing the content of Gilui Shechina, which is Maimar Sinai, Aser Sadibros, Torah Shebetzav, Torah Shebapeh, hi masat ha-yahadut. That is the journey of Judaism. Mitbatelati, and then he tries to connect in like one or two final paragraphs the whole argument of Bikashim Bisham, which we haven't done yet, so I'm going to leave that. But that is the presentation of Mesorah, the connection to Nebuah, the impact, the connection to time. I think it's just a powerful, powerful piece. Anyway, I wanted to read the piece in Ikaros HaGrid as a kind of companion piece, because here too he develops, you know, a very interesting perspective on the concept of Mesorah. Did people read it already? Or not?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, again, the language is still worth noting, but we can go more quickly and finish this up. So he, again, there's a piece in the end, there's a leap or two in the end that are just, again, fascinating. But the basic thrust of it is why two things, right? Why what? What are the two things? The Hakam of the Rambam, right? What bothered him? Why does the Rambam mention that Yehoshua, you know, was the Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu, and he received the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat from the Vitziva also, and also when he had early mentioned that Eliezer, Pinchas, and Yehoshua all were Makabel from Moshe Rabbeinu, and earlier than that, the Rambam doesn't speak about all three tiers, but if you ask me, there are three tiers in the Rambam. Earlier it says that all Klal Yisrael learned with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? I mean, the language of the Rambam really is Limda Moshe Rabbeinu Kula Bebeis Dino L'Shiyam. Sorry, not all clients. Shimskeinim. Right, Limda Moshe Rabbeinu Kula Bebeis Dino L'Shimskeinim. And it says, Elazar Pinchas Yehoshua Shlashtan Kiblu Mimoshe. Right? And then, Uli Yehoshua Shi Talmido Shel Moshe Rabbeinu Masar Torah Shabbat Peh V'Tziva Aleha. Right? And then it also says that Pinchas and Yehoshua, that Pinchas received from Yehoshua and Yehoshua from Moshe. But Pinchas got from Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? And what's Yehoshua different than Eliezer, Pinchas? And you could also ask, what about the Shivim Skedim? So the punchline is that there are two aspects of the Sora. One is, and both of them, the way he presents both of them are actually interesting. One of them, first of all, he said this is, it's interesting, this wasn't just, you know, a vort, you know, or you know, an idea, right? Pa'imim rabotir tzeiti lefnei Abba Mari, hu shibeach asad dvarim ba'od, gam chazar aleid b'shiura. This is like, you know, one of his things, you know. He really believed in this. So basically, Mesorah has two elements. One is Nemonus Ubirur. That also is fascinating, because he seems to suggest that it's a halacha, that the Nemonus and the Birur part of Mesorah is a din. It's not just, you know, something that we rely on, you know, Misvara, humanly. Like, if you look at the Rambam in Gezeria Torah, or the Kuzari, right, you know, this idea of Eidus, and there were so many people, you know, no one were there to corrupt it. You know, they really worked very hard, you know, to try to, like, authenticate, you know, the Masora process and so on. And that, you know, stands on its own. That's certainly very important. But just the, you know, this is a classical, you know, Brisker formulation that, you know, that's the halacha. The original halacha was this is intended to be transmitted through a Masora. Therefore, al pidin, you know, the Masorah is accurate. You know, boom. You know, again, which probably doesn't mean, you know, that it's a, I mean, that there aren't, you know, potentially, you know, mistakes in transmission that take place. But I think the idea is that the Rabbeinu Shalom sanctioned this process, and therefore the changes, let's say, that come about as a result of the human input aspect of it are intended, or they're at least, there are ways to filter them and to manage them, and therefore al pidin, this is what we have. In other words, if somebody could take a time machine and he could, you know, show that, oh, you know, this small error, this, that happened, I don't think this would disrupt the idea. I think the point is this is the intended way that this was to be unfolded, and therefore al pidin, this is correct. Al pidin, it's correct. You know what I mean? Just like we say that, you know, Eidos Alpidin is factual, right? Even though we know that, you know, it's not true. The answer is, until we know, let's say it's, I don't know, I'm making up a number, it's 97% factual, let's say. You know, that might be too high a number, might be too low a number, I don't know. But Alpidin, it's 100% factual, right? Even though the Alpidin knows that occasionally there's an Eidzomim, or somebody who's crazy, or, you know, delusional, you know, and be the dummy, basically. We point to some, you know, Mefarsha, we filter out the be the dummies with two Aiden. You know, once you agree, once you think that there can be a be the, and we all know in the real world, so, you know, maybe the two people that you picked are insane. Although, as I always like to say in explaining this, you know, it's like a little bit of a paraphrase of Tolstoy, you know, but in a different context. You know, all crazy people are, all delusional people are delusional in different ways. No two delusional people are delusional identically. Okay. That's kind of what Tolstoy said, but he said it about happy families. So my point is that when it comes to Eidos, Ram says it clearly, and you know, it's clear from the halacha. We treat it as fact, even though we know there are some liars, and there are some Eidzomim, and there are some delusional people. And even if, again, delusional people are delusional in different ways, that's not 100. You might get a coincidence of their delusionality, you know, and even if it's different, maybe it'll, you know, converge in a certain spot. You can't really ever say that anything human is 100%. But we treat it as 100%, right, until we know otherwise. And the same thing is true about the Masorah. Right. And that's a very critical idea. The other idea, of course, is the bigger one. So the Ikra Amitas Satora Shubalpe and Nemrub Shte Alachos. One is Chachme Mesorah Bimosha Ve'elach Nemanim Limsar Satora Matorah Shubalpe Matsuya Aksha B'Yadeinu Hihi. right? Osa Torah Shenitna L'Moshe Al Pi Din. Right? And the other one is Etzama Kabbalah Ein Rak Maisa Birur Ela Mahava Chalos Shem Bifnei Atlasham Besora VeKabbalah Torah Shemapen Nitna Lihi Maser Kmo Torah Shemitzav Shenitna Lihi Kase The Atzma Shel Torah Shemapen Nitfas VeMesora Kmo Zusha Mitzav B'Ksiva. Even though there's a huge difference of Ksiva and Baal Peh, but that's the point, right? In other words, the oral methodology, you know, and obviously in authoritative, responsible, you know, seasoned hands, gives tochen, added content, you know, to the material. It, you know, it gives coloration, you know. It's more than the sum of its parts, more than the information. Ulamito shel davar limud mesora shnei dvarim nifradim hei. Right, limud ein ela birur, and mesora is a halacha b'fnei atzmo, chutz din limud. It says beautifully written. Okay, so that's what the Rambam meant when he talked. But as I say, I think that really there are three levels. There's limud, lelamed people. There's kabbalah, people who are makabel what you're teaching them, as opposed to hearing it, and you know, I guess accepting it, you know, from a distance, you know, skeptically or you know, filteringly, etc. And then there are the people who you know, are moser too, not just are makabel from. I'm just saying there are three categories in the Rambam, but it doesn't matter. For his purposes, you know, he's emphasizing two. But then what's very intriguing, and I don't want to go so much into this right now, is the next two applications of it. Right? Saw it? So one is makish magideha. Right? What's the point of makish magideha? The truth is that the Rav made, the Rav made this very famous many years later. The Rav had like one public diatribe that people remember. Certainly in my time, only one. No, I didn't say not one. It's more than one. You're like two or three. But that seemed personal, I'll say. And, you know, it got written up and, you know, he didn't usually do this, but he was very upset about, you know, a certain, you know, perspective that was out there. Afkidor Kedusha Mine and Tavameta Tandu Balamesa Barmelo, people we thought were playing like fast and loose with the system of halacha. So before a certain it was rabbinic alumni shiur, I take it back. He like started by like had a little prologue, which he very rarely did, and it was about you know his views on this matter. And at that point, he quoted this Rambam in Perek Gimel Chizkiyahu Malach Ches about Makhish Magideha. And only later, when they published the Igros HaGrid, did I realize that I thought that was very striking what he said, which is right here. But he wrote this in the 30s or the 40s. So I think this is an old Torah. Like people thought, whoa, that's he really thinks that's a pshat. He thought that for, you know, without any agenda, is what I'm trying to say. And so I thought that was always very amazing when I saw it afterwards. And that is that Makhish Magideha is a din and gavra of Chachmei Mesora, and separate from right the content of their teaching. But this, I think I have to understand this very carefully. The Rav is certainly not suggesting that Chachmei HaMesora are infallible. What do you do when Chachmei HaMesora argue with other Chachmei HaMesora, right? And also, people are not infallible, only the Rabbeinu Sholem is infallible. I think clearly what he meant in the Torah Shebaal Peh, let's say, from that other time, clearly is that you shouldn't be questioning the motives of Chachmei HaMesora, and you should be giving them kind of the benefit of the doubt, all things being equal. That's not talking about a machlokas to the Rambam and the Raivin. Meaning, you shouldn't judge Chachmei HaMesora as you would judge, you know, your friend and your neighbor, you know, even somebody who you admire, you know, as being intellectually or you know, morally, you know, reputable or even impressive, right? These are not people to be trifled with, you know, their immersion in Torah, you know, gives them a certain status. And again, you know, this mashal to the Navi, you know, is kind of a little bit lurking in the background here. So it's not infallibility, but it is benefit of the doubt. It's more than the sum of their parts. I mean, their pronouncements are, this is how I understand it, are are likely, you know, a function of their total understanding of the total system, which they have earned, and they have earned our faith or our trust, all things being equal, in that. So instead of saying, you know, mehepepesi all the time, like, you know, show me where it says that in the Shulchan, show me where it says that in the Gemara, show me where it says that in the, you know, whatever, you can mehepepesi people to death. You know, you can just destroy, you know, the breadth of Torah that way. And you could certainly make a case in people their contributions that way. So again, sometimes you should do it because maybe they don't have qualification. But for somebody who, in other words, already has established himself, you know, spiritually and intellectually and whatever the right term is, avodas Hashem wise, as a person who's in the category of Chachmei Mesora, right, they're not infallible, but they're more than the sum of their, you know, abilities to prove it to you. Their instinct and their conviction becomes part of their Torah. That's what it means to be a walking Sefer Torah. He's not saying this. I'm saying this to explain what he's saying. That's how I understand it. So it's not nothing to do with infallibility, and it's not nevuah, and it's not... again, he writes it very strongly here, but I think that's what it is. And the truth is, ironically, I've said this often about the Rav himself. If you read some of the Rav's Hashkafa things... especially position papers, like you know, the thing on Mechitzos or on we can do them sometime if we have a chance. A confrontation, which is about, you know, interfaith dialogue. If you want to mehepetesi it, very easy. Very little, very skimpy amount of riots. It's like what I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Like, you know, where's the proof for these things? If you know who the Rav was, if you're a Talmud of his, or you just have an appreciation for great people, and you get an instinct for knowing when you're in the presence of a great person, you say, wow, you know, this is like a perspective which is so compelling. But part of that is contingent upon the trust that you place in this person. In other words, if you're skeptical and say, you know, he's a computer, he's outputting the data, you know, let's see the punch cards. I don't know if they saw punch cards. You know, where does this come from? Show me. Right? If you take a show me attitude, basically you have eviscerated the halakha as a system, and you've basically neutralized the concept of Chachmei Mesora, because you just made them information machines. And they should all come to the same conclusion, otherwise something's really wrong. The capacity for diversity and the reliance and the respect and the stature that you give to these people is a function of everything you described here. Again, I'm trying to connect the dots. And the result of that is that if you, you know, these people can be, you know, their insights called Das Torah, but this is a logical Das Torah. It's not a, you know, I had a nevuah, you know, you should have the operation. You know, it's a, you know, the halacha isn't clear on this particular application, or there's anomalies, and, you know, there are pluses and minuses. It's not, you know, what do? So we go to those people for their knowledge, but especially for their instinct and for their conviction. Sometimes they'll say, I think it's this. And sometimes they'll say, it can only be this. And if they are, you know, Chachmei HaMesora, walking Sifrei Torah, then it's an amazing thing that we have access to them. So instead of mehepepesiing them, you know, we should feel very fortunate that we live in their generation. So that's basically how I understand what this means. And then, of course, the third application, which is fascinating, but maybe for another time, and that is a connection, I'm really going to be late, to Chachmei, the role of Bezin HaGadol and Chachmei Mesora and Kiddush HaKodesh. Now that, you have to understand, that's why it's in Chutz Kiddush HaKodesh. That's part of a big, larger piece that the Rav, again, from a very, very long time ago, you know, was very into. And that is that one of the functions of Bezin HaGadol and Chachmei Mesora is that they are the representatives of Klal Yisrael. Like, whenever you need, an ambassador to represent the total interest, you need Klal Yisrael to sign on. Right? Sometimes the Chachmei Mesora or Bezin HaGadol, or the Chachmei Mesora, when there is no longer a Bezin HaGadol, kind of play that role. They're the representatives of Klal Yisrael. what's fascinating is that he connects that to this. I mean, to this, you know, double function of a Chachmei HaBesorah, of, you know, Yehoshua and Pinchas and so on, and, you know, Makhish, you know, Magideha. And that is a, not a Dabar Pashut at all, but a very compelling connection. And Ad Kedei Kach, that he even speaks about, you know, he says, in the end, he says, Brahm, there's no Zakei Mamre, actually, but, you know, there's close to it, when you, now again, it doesn't mean that you, that these Chachmei HaBesorah are infallible, and it doesn't mean that that they can't argue with each other. Meaning, if you're not in a position to be arguing with them, then it's like bordering on Zakei Mamre, you know, or Kfira in Chefta Shel Torah itself, for you to be saying, like, you know, Mechatesi, you know, prove it to me, and so on. Part of Torah Shebaal Peh as a system was intended to invest reliance on these rare, you know, authorities. Okay, there's much more to say, but let's move on next time to the beginning. Talk a little bit about the concept of Shira, and Shira specifically, and then start the beginning of Kashrut.